This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and I'm here with Billy Tossey, and this is Property Matters, the show where we talk all things property. Billy, it's nice to have you back. I was getting a bit lonely in the studio. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Greg. Yeah, no, it's really good to be back, and it's been a while since we've had a really good discussion around Property Matters, but really excited for the show today, and certainly a number of topics to discuss for this episode, Greg.
Absolutely, and we'll talk a little bit about the market, and what have you noticed in the market, Billy, with regards to sort of investment properties, investors, but particularly the sales side of the market?
Yeah, there's been a lot go on, Greg, in the investment property sort of sector here in the Manawatu. Obviously, with the news that capital gains tax won't be coming through, I guess a lot of future investors, but also current investors, could have a bit of a sigh of relief. And what I see, Greg, potentially is that sort of area picking up, and probably in the next few months. Now that that's sort of made clear around the capital gains tax, I'm not sure if you've had any other sort of experiences around that one specific area.
Yeah, I think there are investors have breathed the collective sigh of relief, and so that's. The capital gains was going to be one of the many things that was making investing in property less desirable. That's off the table now, so it just means that we'll see a pickup in investors looking to purchase again, and that'll just add a bit of heat to the market, which is already pretty busy in most places. Yep. But there's still the healthy homes stuff happening in the background.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so obviously the Healthy Homes Bill, which, you know, for those landlords out there or future investors, no need to panic. We do have 2 years before these aspects do take place. And that's more so around heating, ventilation, draft stopping, and extraction ventilation as well.
Yeah, a bit around moisture as well, Billy. And the advice we're giving to people at the moment is, even though the government's given good direction on what's happening, not to go and do anything yet. Wait for regulations, because regulations are the actual specifications of what people need to do. It'd be a real shame if a landlord went and put in some heating, for example, and it didn't comply with the law.
So yeah, that's right. The standards have come out, Greg, and like you said, the specific details of those standards will obviously be released in due course. But you don't want to be spending too much money on trying to comply and then find out later on down the track that that all that money that you've spent on your investment property is gone to waste. But certainly don't hit the panic button. And I guess our advice or recommendations would be to engage in professionals in those areas and just sort of start making a plan. I think, Greg, is what we would generally say to most landlords and investors.
Yeah, and unless you've had even if you have had a lot of deferred maintenance over the years, still, we can make a plan around how to get that all sorted within a certain time frame. But I must say that most homes will have a very small amount of expenditure over the next 2 years, most of them.
Yep. And it's from I think, Greg, you and I will both agree that, homes need to be warm and safe for people to live in. And like you mentioned, majority of the homes that are being rented out do comply or do meet majority of these standards. So it's just sort of, I guess, clearing that up and making that our standard of living a lot better.
Absolutely, and another thing that's affecting the market at the moment more nationally, and by nationally, remember 50% of the national market is Auckland, article from Stuff saying the foreign buyer ban has seen a drop in house sales to overseas buyers. Now, there was a bit of scepticism about this because foreign buyers were only about 3% of the market, or just over 3% of the market. But nevertheless, they say house sales to overseas buyers have dropped 81% in the March quarter. That's the first 3 months of this year.
Interesting numbers here, Greg, where foreign buyers bought 204 homes in the first 3 months of this year compared to 1,083 at the same time last year.
That's interesting.
That's huge drop in numbers in terms of foreign buyers buying property.
That's right,
here in New Zealand.
And probably because of the volume in Auckland, Auckland has slowed, there's no doubt about that. And there are some has been some sensationalised reports of massive drops in some areas of Auckland. But remember, they're just based on some stats and they pick out what they want to. But really, the Auckland market's come back a little. It'd certainly be partly to do with this. And that was the Overseas Investment Amendment Bill that came into force in October. So it had that delay. And Chinese investors, of the foreign investors, were a large percentage. And so that's made things a little bit trickier there. There's still 10% of the sales, though, are to companies. And as long as the companies have a director in New Zealand, that is a way that foreign buyers can still buy. But it does seem to have had some effect.
Mm-hmm. Greg, what's your opinion around, I guess, this sort of aspect here in the Manawatu? Have you seen sort of a downturn in investors who are foreign buyers wanting to buy here in the Manawatu?
It's interesting because the Manawatu is almost like the hidden jewel of, I think, within New Zealand. A lot of New Zealand residents who have invested have diversified to the regions a bit more. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen it affect the market here much because it's still a small proportion within the local market that are buying from overseas. I can't say I've noticed anything too dramatic, so therefore you could assume from that it's really just affecting it in a very small way. And in the market in Manawatu, there's still we need up to 500 more properties a year. So if there are a few less that sell to investors, that's not a bad thing, but it may not show up too much in the stats.
And also, I guess, people selling or buying property in the Manawatu, Greg, there's sort of been not too many properties listed, so just going through a quiet phase there.
Yeah, there's no change to the busyness of the market in terms of buyers, and you're still very able to buy, but you're in the situation where there's not that many to choose from, mm-hmm. not many listings. It's hard for salespeople in that there's almost as many salespeople as there are sales each month mm-hmm. for residential sales. But the market's still busy and the house prices are rising. I still say to people, I think the prices will likely go up another 10% in the next 12 months, just my educated opinion. Mm-hmm. So I'm certainly not worried about headlines that come out of Auckland. And we'll talk soon about Wellington market, which you would think if there's a downturn in Auckland, there'd be a downturn in Wellington, but there isn't. We'll talk about that soon. In the meantime, though, a global report, the New World Wealth Global Wealth Migration Review. That's quite a mouthful, Billy. But this global report ranks New Zealand as the seventh most popular bolt hole for millionaires. And what that means is the seventh most popular country for high net wealth people to buy property. So this is on the back of what you said about the overseas investment.
Right.
It is a little bit historic, but it's quite interesting that Australia is actually in the first place in these rankings. It was from a South African research company, but the researchers said that the flow of high net wealth individuals in and out of a country is a good gauge of the health of the economy. Mm. And so that bodes well for the overall economy, the fact that people are seeing New Zealand as a good place to own property.
Yep. And I guess it's, like it mentions in the article, Greg, for the wealthy, there are many things in terms of hobbies and activities that they can do as well. So a lot of people
Absolutely.
Are investing in certain areas, you know, for example, Queenstown,
yes.
Where there are so many things that they can do and invest, you know, property down there as well and sort of set up, I guess, an area for them to reside in.
Yeah, and Millbrook Golf Resort, I'm not sure if you've been there. I haven't, but it's in Queenstown.
Yeah, no, I haven't been there. I've heard much about it. And
that's generally known as the Millionaire's Playground, which says something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So but speaking of millionaires, if you have got a little bit of spare loose change, Billy and I are going to look at where is the most expensive place to buy property currently in the world. So, Philly, tell us where that's come out.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. I didn't expect the place that we'll announce to be the most expensive place, but it's in Hong Kong. And I know I've got a friend over there living in Hong Kong at the moment, cannot afford a property whatsoever.
Well,
there was a small area that sort of a little park area. It recently got valued at $200 million.
Oh.
It'd probably be no more than an acre.
That's outstanding.
So, but also on this article here, Greg, on Stuff, there is a what is it, four-bedroom,
yes,
two-bathroom property that is on the market at the moment for just over $97
million. $97
million.
And it's incredible. When you read the description, it's not what you would actually imagine
as
a $90 million house. But Hong Kong, of course, incredibly small footing, I guess, small land area, and it's just incredible. There was another property that was, in a way, very similar, not remarkable in any way, that was four bedrooms and four and a half bathrooms, and that was put on the market at $618 million. Now, these are the headlines that newspapers pick up on, but, yeah, so you can see why people look at New Zealand as a place to have a second property,
yeah,
considering what you get for the money.
Another interesting article that's come up, Greg, is local now, is in Fielding, where you know, there is a concern around decimated property around the earthquake-prone building areas
there
as
is.
Well. So the sort of older type-style buildings around in and around Fielding that may be affected due to earthquakes.
That's right, and due to the legislation mainly, because you wouldn't want to get something wrong and then be held to account should you not have your property up to standard. So this issue is around Fielding's town centre. It's got stunning historic buildings. If you're actually on any street in the centre of Fielding and you stand back so you can see the tops of the buildings above the immediate street line, it's really nice. But there is a upgrade or demolish ultimatum which could kill the heart of Fielding. So Michael Ford, who's the deputy mayor over there, was saying that the demands are too soon, and he's asking to, because the requirements for it, 90 buildings in the CBD of Fielding has to be done in 7.5 years. Now,
wow.
Now that's reliant on, of course, the people that do the work to be able to actually do the work. So that was just, this article's mainly about Michael Ford and some councillors wanting to get some key buildings within 7.5 years, but not all buildings. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Yeah, like you said, Greg, that will be a huge, I guess, you know, the small town of Fielding will be, that will be a huge hit to them if they have to go through with 90 buildings that need some sort of work or demolishment, in the main CBD area.
That's right. So that's a concern. We'll have to watch the space and see what's happening there. I mean, it's a tough one. You could argue, what's the likelihood of an earthquake? But you could have argued that prior to Christchurch a number of years ago. So they have to take these things seriously. But suffice to say, no one's being let off the hook. They're just asking to stretch that out a little bit more, starting maybe with the ones that are of most concern. So we can keep you posted on that. This article was on Stuff and has got pictures of quite a number of these nice old buildings if people do look that up.
I guess it's important as well, Greg, for tenants of these buildings as well, if running businesses out of
Absolutely.
These buildings and being aware that, they're not up to standard or need some form of work.
It's a pretty big shuffling
could
act.
Could be big, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, now just on the general market as well, it's been interesting, Billy, because I've been looking to buy a investment property lately, and I thought, you know what, casting my mind back a few years, I thought, well, I might have a look on realestate.co.nz and see what's selling in Wairarapa, because it's usually a bit cheaper than the Manawatu. And I was really surprised. You could virtually add $100,000
at least
onto what you might buy a similar property for here in Palmerston North in the areas I was looking, which is around Greytown and Featherston and so forth. So there's an article here from the Times Age, and this is the Wairarapa paper. It says Wairarapa properties still strong, and they give several examples of percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a whole, in March, the annual growth rates were 21.7% in Tararua. And what they mean by that is the price is going up. I mean, that's only just behind Manawatu Whanganui, which was at 23. So what do you think's driving some of this growth in Wairarapa, Billy?
Oh, definitely the filter effects coming from Wellington.
Yeah.
For any people who have had the opportunity to go and visit Wairarapa, it's a beautiful and stunning area. In particular, your Greytowns, your Featherstons, even your Martinborough. There's a lot happening now in these small areas, and it's just, I guess, people probably understand that it's actually a really good area for them to get away from the busy hustle-bustle life of Wellington.
Absolutely, and property brokers who sell in a number of the regions around the country said that 500 of the 3,400 properties sold in the North Island last year were to buyers from Auckland or Wellington who are either relocating or investing in the region. So we've noticed in the investment market in the Manawatu, it's been good. I was talking to people over in Wairarapa recently at a rather large networking event, and they were saying, yeah, the demand coming up from Wellington and the ease or relative ease now of transport to Wellington is a big factor there.
I was just going to say, Greg, that's interesting numbers coming from the Wairarapa. You know, $100,000 more than what we are here in Manawatu. That's incredible.
Absolutely. Now we're just going to go to a song, and this is Kings of Leon with Sex on Fire. We're back. This is Greg Watson on Property Matters. I managed to absolutely just chop off the song there, Billy, so apologies for that. That was Kings of Leon with Sex on Fire, but we're back with Property Matters. And we were talking before the break about Wairarapa and Tararua and how things are really, really changing there. And it's interesting because if we look at Palmerston North City, for example, it's got record median price of $411,000, but you go across to the likes of Carterton and it's at $434,000. And at South Wairarapa, it's 511, and it leads us quite nicely into the next bit of our conversation, which is around the Wellington market. And when we see what the prices are like there, which we'll talk about soon, you can see why people drift north to be able to get something more affordable. And this was an article that was in the Stuff Business section called Record Numbers of people buying first homes as rent prices continue to escalate. So it looks like first home buyers really are heading up the Hutt Valley in Pararua towards the area we're talking about.
Well, yeah, Greg, it's, I mean, when we look at it compared to Manawatu, you know, the Wairarapa or South Wairarapa area, you know, those are significant prices compared to Manawatu. But when you take a look at Wellington, well, it makes sense to, I guess, drift out into this region here.
What's the average sort of house price in Wellington City at the
moment? So in Wellington City, you're looking at $831,000.
Average house price, that's incredible.
For average house price. And then if we go into Pōuru, $597,000. Lower Hutt is $590,000. And then Upper Hutt, $548,000.
Yeah, so that can really make a difference to a mortgage, particularly given the loan-to-value ratios that as they continue to build that infrastructure, it's just a case of, I guess, with any big city, you know, first-home buyers not being able to be as close in as they might have previously wanted to.
Well, I mean, $831,000, Greg, you know, those are numbers that we talked about at the start of this year, you know, that are very comparison to Auckland.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we saw the effect of those sorts of prices, people moving outside of Auckland or to, you know, I guess suburbs that are quite far away from the city centre, and we're seeing the same here in Wellington as well, from people migrating out into areas like the Wairarapa.
That's right, and even rents across that region as a whole have gone up 8% to $525 per week. So it's not only the first home buyers, but I guess it's tenants as well, and that makes it pretty tough. A number of people were looking at buying apartments because they're a bit cheaper, but as we'll talk about soon, there's other costs like insurance skyrocketing, but we'll come to that in a moment. I just wanted to mention with Wellington that it's still very much on the way up.
Mm. I think some of the other areas or key aspects to people migrating outside of Wellington, Greg, is the improved transportation sector for Wellington.
Definitely.
There's a number of areas of roading that are going to be significant to people actually being able to commute from Wairarapa to Wellington, you know, in a fairly reasonable time frame.
It's so different now. If you haven't been over that road in some time, it's really shortened the distance in terms of travelling time, which is great.
And you've got the Capital Express as well with trains. I know a lot of people that, take away from Wairarapa, but also commute from the likes of Waikanae right up to Otaki, into Wellington for work. And,
yes.
and those areas are obviously becoming very popular now for people who just cannot afford a price of $830,000 in central Wellington.
Absolutely. And another thing that's not helping in a way was that a lot of apartment owners in Wellington are really scared with what's happening in the insurance industry to a certain extent, and that's where the insurance companies are now looking at the risks geographically in New Zealand for owning housing. And this can be things like, for example, if you're in Wellington, they're saying it's actually a pretty big earthquake risk, and so the premiums are going up in some of these areas. So, and particularly if the building is slightly earthquake prone, they're taking money out of insurance in some cases and trying to put it towards a strengthening to make them comply. Mm. So it's an interesting situation. They give one example in the article of one small complex whose insurance premiums have tripled since 2016. So
wow.
That's from 14,000 up to 57,000. Now, if you're an owner in that small complex, that's $12,000 a year. I'm trying to do the math on that in my head, but I mean, that's hundreds of dollars a week.
Wow.
For insurance. So apartments might sound a bit cheaper, but with these insurance changes, it looks like it's still going to be, you're going to have to be really careful if buying apartments in certain areas in Wellington.
Has a runoff effect as well, Greg, you know, through rents and everything else.
It does.
I guess, you know, when something like insurance has tripled in the last 3 years, well, that's why Wellington at the moment has seemed to be, you know, I guess up there with regards to the rental prices
yes.
We see around New Zealand.
Absolutely. And we're, say if your insurance individually, let's say it was, and there's examples in an article that was in the business section, another article that was quoting a house split into two flats in Brooklyn. Brooklyn, I should say, has been quoted $3,700 for insurance, and that's gone up from $2,700 in the last few years. So unfortunately, as you say, these tend to get passed on to tenants in terms of rent increases. However, I do feel sorry for the body corp situations. That's the ones where you contribute to insurance in some of these buildings. So there is a silver lining for some areas, and those are the ones that are less earthquake prone, that insurance premiums could possibly come down a bit. And that's an interesting way that the insurers are looking at it. They're saying, let's try and be as scientific as possible. And if you live in a part of New Zealand where the earthquake risk is less, your insurance could possibly go down. I'll believe that one when I see it.
Yeah. I was going to say, Greg, like if that did took place, what in your opinion, what would you see sort of happen from an investment point of view from, you know, compared to these high risk areas where premiums are high to the low-list areas where premiums are now going to be reduced?
Yeah, well, I think one thing particularly in the cases of these buildings that aren't yet earthquake-prone is that the owners are going to have to spend a considerable amount of money fairly quickly in order to keep their insurance. Mm. And that means that, yeah, if there are those hikes in rent, it's going to affect tenants in the areas where the insurance premiums go down. Again, without meaning to sound too cynical, chances are that won't be passed on to tenants, and the owners will probably just keep that money.
Could you see more of owners who own these apartment-style investment properties sell and buy in other areas like the low-risk?
Yeah, I think that's quite likely. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And that's where if you've got an apartment, why not sell it and diversify? Again, until they get the earthquake stuff sorted out, there's probably a few little fish hooks there, or it might be a little bit difficult to sell. But then again, you could always buy in an area with a higher return.
Well, if you're getting, Greg, $850,000 in Wellington, might be able to get two properties in the likes of Palmerston North.
Yeah, that's right, that's true. So I'll just moving on now, folks. I just wanted to talk about another article, Billy, which is the about moving into a rental side of things, which is an article that was in Stuff Business. It was also in the Dunedin papers. It was quite widely publicised over the last week, and that's it. Dunedin property managers and landlord fined for taking more than 12 months to fix a leaky flat. Now, we're not talking a little bit leaky, though. I got the impression from the article. We were talking really, really quite leaky, and it was a woman with two young children, and she had to use buckets and tarpaulins to protect her belongings every time it rained for more than a year, despite telling her property manager of the leaky roof.
It makes me angry when I read these sorts of articles,
Greg. It really
does. You know, I guess the property manager and the company need to, you know, take a long look at what they do and what service they're providing, because to me that's terrible. And, you know, a tenant... you know, it doesn't matter if it is a woman with two children or whoever, don't need to be living in a property where they're having to use buckets and tarpaulins to get rid of leaking water.
Yeah, have you ever lived in Dunedin?
No, I haven't, no. Yeah,
I know it gets cold down there. I've been down there in the middle of winter, but imagine somewhere that's not watertight and is full of draft. So what happened was the tenancy compliance unit and investigations team was tipped off, if you like, and the company and the landlord were fined over $2,000 for exemplary damages. Now, exemplary damages is what the Americans call punitive damages. It's it's effectively a slap on the wrist payment that you. So the landlord had to pay the tenant this, and just for failing to provide and maintain the premises in a reasonable state of repair. I can't see how a property management company doing its job properly would let this happen.
Yeah.
You'd either part company with the owner of the property and say, hey, if you're not going to fix it, we're not interested, or the fact that our industry is unregulated and you get great variance.
Yeah, I think both, Greg. I think, you know, with an unregulated industry, you do have, you know, some of these situations where, you know, the level of service is well below others.
And that's on that slightly damp note. That's actually all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, Billy. It's been fantastic having you back.
Yeah, great being back, Greg, and many topics to discuss, which is awesome. So, we'll, thanks very much for listening, everyone.
Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
So support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.